Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
This is the worst year ever. A podcast we all get paid to do, and yet don't introduce with any kind of gravity or respect for our professional competence. A bit which will eventually run dry, but which hasn't yet.
Yeah. Much gravity there. That was our THX opening.
Mm-hmm. We really like to make it unappealing to be listening if you're new to us.
Yeah, for the love of God.
Stay away.
What are
you doing?
Stay the fuck out. Yeah, what are you doing? Find another podcast. Go listen to Countdown.
And that's how we all get fired.
Yeah, well. So speaking of fired.
Telling people not to listen at the very beginning of the episode.
That's how you start a podcast,
reason.
Cody.
It's not a bad reason.
That's how
Go
you start
on,
a podcast.
Get.
It's like how classically, in his first breakout hit, Terminator, James Cameron opened the movie by insulting the audience for 47 straight minutes.
which yeah, went on it's to just become like that.
One of cinema's great hits, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's our goal.
He was an innovator, you know?
He's an innovator and our producer, executive producer, James Cameron.
Right. Well, that's why we're recording this under the sea.
$40 billion dollars to produce.
Yeah. We're in the abyss right now.
Yeah, this whole thing is recorded in the depths of the Marianas Trench.
We're all breathing that fluid right now.
Yeah, he's working on building our new podcast studio at the bottom of the Titanic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very grateful. We're very grateful.
thank you. We should talk about the horrific violence in Colombia.
We should. Great pivot.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I see.
You know what's not at the bottom of the Marianas Trench? Public awareness of the war crimes of the Colombian state. Well, not war crimes, but you know.
There we go. That's where they'd like them to be.
That is where they'd like them to be. Yes, Cody. Thank you for tying that all together.
We're going to do our best to make that not true today.
So, I don't know. We should probably start by chatting a little bit about Plan Colombia, because I think that ties in to everything we're going to talk about. And we've chatted about this a bit before when we talked about one of the episodes we did about Joe Biden, because Joe Biden famously took credit for Plan Colombia. Uh-huh. It's not all on him, but he was, of course, a big like backer of the idea. And the gist of it is, starting in the year 2000, the U.S. government started sending just a fuckload of money in military aid and weapons and in straight cash to the Colombian governments in order to eradicate the cocaine trade. The goal of Plan Colombia, the like stated goal, was to cut coca production by 50%. Colombia has at...
cut it with what? Sorry.
That's a good segue, Cody, because since Plan Colombia started in 2020, there have only been 2 years where Colombia was not the number one cocaine producer on the planet. And in those 2 years, it wasn't because Colombian production really dropped. It was because Peru got a lot better at making coke.
Yep.
And Colombia is still the number one cocaine producer. Plan Colombia has achieved roughly nothing in terms of reducing.
Did you just say that it started in 2020?
No, 2000. 2000 is when Plan Colombia started.
Okay.
And so we've poured $10 billion into the Colombian military and the police and the intelligence apparatus. We've sent in special forces. We've trained a lot of their guys with our guys. And nothing has been accomplished in terms of the eradication of Colombian cocaine. As you will know, if you have been to a nightclub before, you know, the plague hit. I assume there's still places to buy cocaine today, but if you're not buying cocaine in a bathroom, what are you even doing with cocaine? You're doing nothing.
Yeah, you're not using cocaine, right?
No, you're not. Cocaine is meant to be consumed in a bathroom stall off of the screen of your friend's phone.
Exactly. Randomly, unexpected.
Key.
You weren't really going to that night, but you're like,
sure
okay,
weren't.
It's here. Okay, well, just a little bit, and then you go from there.
Yeah, exactly. That has not gotten harder to do as the result of Plan Colombia. What has gotten harder...
The pandemic has worked better than Plan Colombia.
Yes, it absolutely has. What Plan Colombia has done is allowed the Colombian government to brutally crack down on left-wing opposition, both in terms of the FARC, which is a... I don't know, you could call them like a leftist insurgent organization, mm-hmm. but also in terms of like local villages and towns that are just more sympathetic to different left-wing groups than they are to the government. There have been numerous massacres of civilians by the government, as well as massacres of left-wing politicians. Just a shitload of violence, because primarily, like, and how the U.S. government has kind of justified continuing to fund the Colombian government is we've continued to say, you know, this is still, we're only giving them money to eradicate drugs, but because different left-wing groups fund themselves through the sales of cocaine, it counts as fighting cocaine if they're just murdering leftists in the mountains.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't think is rad, but the U.S. government, bad. I guess, does. And what we're seeing, we're going to talk, you know, about this all today, but there's a shitload of horrific violence in Colombia by the police. And we, you know, have a heavily militarized police force using weapons they got from us. You know, helicopters that the U.S. sent Colombia have been firing on protesters, all that shit. Yeah, I want to read a quote from an article in The Guardian about Plan Colombia that I think kind of gives a decent, you know, overview of some of what we've been talking about. Quote, initially, Plan Colombia was described as a counter-narcotics and military strengthening strategy, and the focus was on massive drug crop spraying, building up military capacity, and offering some incentives to coca growers to switch to legal crops. Andrés Pastrana, the Colombian president under whom Plan Colombia began, says the strategy was a turning point in the country's decades-old war. Before the plan, security forces were on the defensive and on the verge of military defeat by guerrillas, he told The Guardian in an emailed response to questions. Afraid of getting bogged down in a Vietnam-style quagmire, Congress initially restricted the use of donated helicopters and other hardware strictly to fighting drug production and trafficking. A battalion of 3,000 men trained by U.S. Special Forces could not be used to combat the guerrillas or paramilitaries unless their targets were clearly protecting drug labs or coca fields. That ended after the 9/11 attacks in New York and Washington, when the U.S. became openly engaged in fighting narco-terrorism in Colombia. That is where Plan Colombia did succeed, in helping the Colombian government take control, in some areas for the first time, of its territory, fighting back guerrillas to mountain and jungle redoubts and driving them to begin peace negotiations with the government in 2012. So that's what's actually happened with Plan mm-hmm. Colombia. It's been kind of under the auspices of fighting drugs. It's really been to allow the right-wing government of Colombia to beat the leftist guerrillas into, you know, negotiating a peace. You can have whatever opinion on that you want, but a lot of what we're going to talk about today, the horrific violence being done to civilians who are protesting, is the end result of a military that has been trained only, and a police force that's been trained only mm-hmm. to do that, that's been trained by the United States to use deadly force to stop political enemies of the government.
Yeah, so that's the only time the U.S. has done this kind of
yes,
thing,
this
though,
is that's what everyone calls Colombia, the one time the U.S. interfered in a nation's politics to stop left-wing social movement.
Yeah, at least we're not making
not
the same mistake
phrase,
over and over again. At mm-hmm. least we're not doing that.
No. If the world knows one thing about Americans, it's that we only make each mistake once.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you said, yeah, yeah. You yeah. said you can have any opinion you want about that, and I think it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's fine.
The standard opinion.
Yeah.
Classic American opinion.
So, yeah, and Biden is, you know, Biden's a big part of Plan Colombia because he was a major backer of it. He's also, like, kind of everyone is. Like, this is not something there has been meaningful disagreement between Republicans and Democrats on. They both have kept pissing money into the Colombian military state for the same purpose. Totally good to dunk on Biden for this, but, like, again, they're all complicit because this is something that's not controversial within the U.S. electorate. American citizens don't really give a shit about this as a bloc. And so it doesn't matter what they do.
Right. And Biden's always been very, like, vocal about these kinds of things.
Yes, absolutely.
He was always, like, you know, the bipartisan law and order guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he, of course, would be very, very supportive of this kind of thing.
And this is, you know, you can talk about, we'll be talking about Israel soon, but, like, there are members of the Israeli government that are very good at talking to American citizens and politicians in the way that makes them sympathetic, which is to talk about terrorism, which is a thing that Americans kind of blindly will throw money at. Mm-hmm. Drugs are a thing Americans will kind of blindly throw money at, which is why it's framed this way, as we're stopping the production of deadly drugs. No, that's a little bit of what you're doing, but it's not stopping the drug trade. You're actually just bombing and executing people who disagree with this government in the mountains. And, you know, of course, there's tie-ins to a lot of these different left-wing groups are seen as being bad for U.S. businesses that are based in Colombia. And this is a thing that's happened elsewhere in Central America. So I don't want to, like, reduce all of that. But, you know, that's the broad strokes of kind of what we've been doing in Colombia for years. And obviously, we started fucking around there and funding the right wing in Colombia and sending over military advisors way before the year 2000. The School of the Americas is heavily tied in this, right? We've been doing this shit since, like, the 70s at least. But Plan Colombia, I think, officially kicked off in 2000.
Yeah, it's some shades of all the things that we do.
Yeah,
but things are fine now.
Yeah, things are great in Colombia, and that's the end of the episode. Go visit Bogota, the place where nothing is violent.
I don't know what to say right now.
We should talk about like what's actually happening there now.
We should talk about what's that. I mean, yeah. I just get so angry whenever I learn about our impact. Learn more, remember, reminded all the things about our the things that we do around the world. And I know we joked about it, but we have done this a lot. And
we sure have.
And it just feels like screaming into the void sometime. But here we are. We are going to talk about it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where one of the traps we get stuck into is domestically, there's a pretty significant difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And I disagree with people who say that there's not. Like, you can see it. Just a recent example would be Biden trying to stick with the Trump refugee caps and getting shamed and increasing it to 65,000. You know, that's not meaningless. There's a number of examples like that.
I mean, you don't have the Democratic Party making all these like anti-trans bills across
exactly
the nation,
exactly
like
yeah
that.
There are significant differences between the two parties domestically. Internationally,
don't know,
not as much as there should be. You know, you can make a claim about, like, for example, civilian deaths as a result of U.S. drone strikes and airstrikes leapt massively when Trump took office for a number of different policy reasons. Among them, he stopped the military from needing to report civilian casualties as a result of our airstrikes. We don't know if they've gone down. Like, Biden hasn't been in office enough. Like, maybe after a year or so, we'll be able to tell if there's if that difference, like if things drop back down. Hard to say. There's also the complicating factor of ISIS being more active when Trump took office. But generally speaking, domestically, there's a big difference between the two parties. Internationally, they both do a lot of the same shit, lot of the exact same shit, and because, mostly just rubber stamp the same things, like playing Colombia.
This is simplistic, but as we talked about a moment ago, you know, a lack of awareness of what's happening internationally, just in general, people, our American attention span being so short and not conditioned to looking externally at other places. And really thinking about critically about our actions and the influence worldwide means that there's not public pressure. We can pressure Biden domestically, but most people aren't tuned in enough to. And so at the end of the day, it just also highlights they're all fucking politicians. And, you know, if there was a big liberal uprise, a movement of people saying, no, this is important, this is stuff that we have to be talking about and caring about, maybe we would see more pressure on politicians. I don't know.
Maybe. But yeah, it is. It's
it would take a lot, you know.
Well, so ingrained in America, it's a bipartisan effort. Like, America, like, regardless of party, it is America first. Like, that is what it is. It's just Trump is a more grotesque and obvious version of it, heightened for sure.
Because he's saying America first, but yeah.
Right. But, like, the mindset is still there, and a lot of the difference is in sort of, like, the delicate touch or the, you know, the sort of aesthetic, like, we're trying to paint a nicer face on it. But when you really get down to it, it's very, very similar.
Cody, you want to get us started on why shit started in Colombia?
Taxes!
Taxes.
We love taxes, don't we, folks? There were a lot of regressive taxes imposed caused what we call for quite a lot, actually, is basically a general strike in response to lowering the threshold at which salaries are taxed, affecting anyone with a monthly income of $684 or more.
Okay, so it's only going after the rich.
Yeah, exactly. What a fucking figure that is.
Yeah,
my God.
I mean, it's you've seen some of the same shit done by Macron in France. Obviously, you know, there's differences, but like the basic idea of we're hitting, it's this thing that happens all over in the neoliberal world. Things have gotten difficult. It's time to tax the working class.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the working class in Colombia was like, that ain't it, dude.
No, not this time.
That, what was that income threshold again? What was that?
Monthly income of $684 or more.
Oh, my God. I don't think I let that hit me hard enough.
And it's, you know, the financial situation is different there, but not that different.
That's
not a lot of money. Yeah.
Almost half the population's
for
in poverty.
A country that, yes, is so impoverished. You're trying to make it worse? You're trying to exacerbate that poverty?
You're just trying not to fuck with the people who fund the government.
Yeah.
And the people who fund the government aren't the people who are protesting it.
Yep.
By and large.
Yeah.
And by fund the government, I mean like bribe the politicians. Not
yeah.
Bribe
yeah.
They
yeah.
bribe
no,
the politicians to not pay more in taxes. Yeah. Yeah, there would also be a VAT tax, which is like a value-added tax. We don't call it that in the United States, but it's a tax on like normal goods that people need to survive, and thus is a tax that will primarily impact people without very much money.
Who struggle to survive.
Yeah, who struggle to survive. And it's kind of, you see this pitched a lot by libertarians in the U.S. that like, we shouldn't have income tax. We should just have like a national sales tax. And it's like, well, because that, and they're like, well, that's fair. Everybody just has to pay, you know, the same sales tax for stuff they buy. It's like, yeah, but that's not as fair for people who were poor because they can't avoid the sales tax. Whereas we say with an income tax, if you're getting below a certain income, you don't have to. Yeah, it's the same.
The sales tax would have to be much higher.
Yes, it does.
That means that the people that make less won't be able to afford the things. Okay. So.
Even less. Yes.
Yes, even less. All right. Anyway.
Yeah, seems bad. It also, you know, as we've talked about, I don't know if you've heard, there is a pandemic going on. So unemployment on the rise, a lot of problems, and this sort of this did it. Rallies started to get organized, the president tried to withdraw it, but that was too late.
Yeah.
Well, because in the interim, you know, people are protesting, and of course you're seeing even more of this police violence, which isn't solely happening during this. It's a problem anyway.
Right, it's a problem
we'll talk
anyway.
About,
yeah.
But, you know, it's about so much more than just the income tax thing at the moment.
Right. Well, you get people participating in a general strike and you get people in the streets, and then you see all the, you know, the state violence and the state's response to it. It's hard to put that cat back in the bag once people's eyes get more and more opened on what the state will do to them, but also on the power of everybody coming together for a cause.
Yeah, and I think it depends. You know, we had our version of this last year in a lot of places, and I think one of the reasons, you know, there's a number of reasons it died down. Some of them were the fact that Trump was, you know, pretty soundly had his ass kicked politically. But a big part of it was the state violence was really horrific. And after a while, people had enough and they had lives that were broadly comfortable to return to, most of them. And this is not necessarily the case for a place with as many people in poverty as Colombia and as desperate a situation as Colombia. One of the things that's been happening there is because, you know, they added like 2.8 million new people in poverty as a result of the coronavirus. And one of the things extreme poverty. And one of the things that kind of went viral there was families who did not have enough food to eat, who were starving, tying like red strips of fabric around their doors.
Awful.
And that is the kind of thing that can make – that can give, I don't know, what you want to call it, a protest movement, an insurrection, more legs.
Yeah. I mean, it's life and death for everybody, whereas, yes, our protest movements are also about life and death. But
yeah.
Different set of circumstances.
Right. You can put your BLM sign in the yard and dust yourself off, right?
I mean – just take a moment to say I am blown away and impressed and inspired by these general protest movements rising up in the face of extreme danger. You know, when we talked about this a few weeks ago about Myanmar, you know, as well. But I hate the circumstances of bringing that to about, of course. To about? Oof. Words.
To about. Yeah. Nice work, Katie. Really Ugh. Nailed it there.
Well, it's to about time for an ad break.
There we go. Thanks, Sophie. All right, well, now we
we're
can't
going
cut.
To pivot to yeah. an ad about whatever Great. It is for.
See, guys, now we can't ask for my little fumble to be cut.
What fumble? No. I didn't hear a
fumble.
But
we can't cut. You can't edit audio anyway.
So. Yeah. And you wouldn't want to edit perfection. So
No,
yeah.
never. Anyway, yes. go listen to ads.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Oh, God. You know what's great is being back with all you people talking mm-hmm. about state violence.
Oh, I see. I see what we're doing.
What's violent? My state of, well, all of them, really.
Yeah.
Where did we kick off here?
Where did we leave off?
Yeah.
Kicking it off with where we left off. The protests did not subside, despite mm-hmm. the tax being rescinded.
Yeah.
Because it's
bill.
About more than just the taxes. Because
yeah, the tax it's was, it's like with Chile, law. Right? When those kids started yeah. hopping fares and then, you know, getting the shit kicked out of them. Like, that's the fare increase in the subway is kind of like what sparked things. But, like, that wasn't what yeah. it was about. You know, it's just like how last year's uprisings, the spark was George Floyd's murder. It wasn't just about that, you know,
right,
like it never
right.
is. It's just eventually there's always something that is too much. And this tax was too much. And the government did what governments always do. And they tried to stop the uprising by pushing, you know, canceling the one thing that they assumed was the root of the problem.
Yeah, they said whoopsie. Because they thought, yeah, well, okay,
but
that
before,
was too far.
Ooh, an oopsie noodles by the government. The
but before they bad, did the bad, oopsie, bad. They murdered a bunch of people.
Well, yeah.
So that's an important context.
Yeah. I mean, but who among us hasn't murdered a bunch of people?
Raising my hand.
Yeah.
I'm raising my hand.
Okay, so everybody's big league in me. All right.
Yeah, take that.
Sophie.
Murderer,
Sophie remains
apparently.
Silent, but,
Yeah, Sophie.
What do you want from me?
How many people have you murdered? Raise your hands.
I don't know a lot.
Okay, so we're 50-50 here.
All right, 50-50, well, see?
Both sides.
Yeah.
Both sides. Fine violence people. On both sides
violence on
of
both
this
sides.
Podcast.
Yeah.
All right, so back to Colombia. As we talked about, like, unemployment has basically doubled in Colombia since the pandemic began. Their GDP dropped about 7%, while poverty rose to nearly half of the country, 42.5%. There's a new variant of the virus in the country, mm-hmm. which is further fucking up things for everybody. So it's just like...
Especially hitting, you know, impoverished communities, mm-hmm. which is now half the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, so it's one of those things, I think... As a result of the severity of the economic situation, there's a good chance we're dealing with a situation where the protests, the uprising, whatever you want to call it, is less likely to die down mm-hmm. Because people don't have a life to go back to. It's kind of more existential. You know, whereas when folks, number one, have less of a reason, like more of a reason to be afraid of incarceration or something. But also just when, you know, when protesting is or up, you know, when participating in the uprising is something that takes them away from the comforts of their life. Well, if they don't have those comforts because their life fell apart before shit started. Yeah.
And you know, the risk of death is worth it in order to try to, you know, that's a really important perspective to keep in mind, that when your life is so bad and your conditions are so bad that risking death is the only option That's a desperate situation.
Yeah, and I think it's because a lot of people would say continuing the status quo is death. The government was offering death by, you know, trying to take more money from us when we're already starving. It's death versus death, and at least we'll go out fighting, you know, if we go out. Or maybe we'll win. Hopefully they win. But I think that's kind of how a lot of people see it. And yeah, in the since things started as like and things kicked off in about May 7th, at least 37 protesters have been killed. We're probably looking at an actual number that's much higher than that. Like you're talking people are there's something somewhere around 100 people have just gone missing. And that number is probably higher, too, because, again, this is a government that was trained by the U.S., including special forces and like our fucking spook networks. To disappear people, right? Like that's part of the fucking job that they were taught how to do. So we don't actually know the death count, and we may never know the true death count. Thousands of people have been injured. And most of the munitions being used are rubber rounds, foam rounds, tear gas, flashbangs. But real live rounds have also been used a number of times. There have been cases of hooded military and police officers firing semi-automatic rifles into crowds that included mothers and children. From The Guardian, quote, few scenes have been quite so hellish as those in Salo, Reyes's mountainside home, where police have used live rounds, flown Blackhawks just above houses, and fired tear gas for nights on end. They fumigate us like we're insects, Reyes said. I've seen people with COVID on ventilators who can't breathe, and they seem in less pain than the kids drowning in those gases. And again, not only is the tear gas manufactured by Defense Technologies, but those Blackhawks came courtesy of our tax dollars, too. Part of that $10 billion in aid that went to the Colombian military.
There we go again.
We love exporting weapons of death.
Anyway.
Yeah. And this is the kind of stuff, like you said, like this is the kind of stuff that's been happening. It's just, it's the most blatant now because of what they're responding to.
I just have a question, and that is, what is the U.S. response currently to the protests?
Well, not much.
Not much at all,
that's,
right?
That's basically, like there's a, because I saw, like, we would stop sending aid or whatever if they don't rescind the you know, the new law? I don't know. But there, yeah, that's what I mean. It's like I haven't seen much in terms of what our response is to what's happening.
Yeah, I mean,
I have seen nothing. From like the administration.
We've had some U.S. lawmakers, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, condemn the Colombian government's human rights abuses. So that has happened. But I have not seen any. I've not seen any real.
All right. I'm calling it right now. Maybe what I was just referring to was a nightmarish dream because that's how I've been sleeping lately. Anyway, okay, that's cool. AOC is the only one.
Well, no, there's been other members of the government, but nothing has actually been done, right? It's like nice for elected leaders to speak out against the Colombian government, but it would be nicer to stop giving them guns.
Yeah.
But a statement, literally the bare minimum, would be something. 37 protesters have been killed since 4 days ago.
Yeah.
So,
and again, that's probably super.
Oh yeah, like that's the number that we.
And it's I haven't seen any information about any actions that's been taken.
Okay.
Here's a quote from the end of an article in The Hill. Still, the Biden administration is giving the benefit of the doubt to Duque, who is the current president, encouraging the government to cool down tempers through dialogue with protest leaders. The Colombian people need to have this conversation. It's not an appropriate time for the U.S. to comment when we haven't gotten all the details, said a Biden spokesman.
All right, there it is. Definitely not what I imagined the response was.
Lower than the bare minimum.
It's wild. Because they commented really fast on the most recent escalation of violence by the Israeli government. And I don't know if they had all the details there either.
Right.
But they made us. They sure came out swinging.
I don't worry about that.
I don't know that they ever have all the details before they make stances. But anyway.
Now, that said, we should talk about kind of how this all has affected politics within Colombia itself. Mm-hmm. One thing that's worth noting is kind of prior to the pandemic and everything, you know, prior to the pandemic and really like prior to Trump coming into office, actually, in the like early aughts and mid aughts, the Colombian people had a very high level of approval for their police, more than 70% of the country in the early 2000s. By 2020, that number was just 48%. And this process of kind of people the people's trust of the police dropping rapidly really kicked off in 2016 after a series of human rights abuses and corruption allegations forced the Colombian police force's top commander to resign, and more than 1,400 police officers were dismissed. So there were a bunch of scandals kind of leading up to the present violence that led to a massive drop in people's trust in the police. There were political demonstrations and riots in 2019 and 2020 about police brutality. Hundreds of protesters were taken unlawfully and detained. Many of them were sexually assaulted or beaten. 13 people were killed. The abuses were so horrific that the Colombian Supreme Court mandated the government restructure use of force guidelines. So this is all kind of playing into what's happening now.
Dang, really sounds like Planned Colombia turned things askew here.
Yeah, I mean,
all of this stuff starts happening in the early aughts, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and it's pretty wild because, like, that's all horrible, but also the fact that after police horribly cracking down on protests against police, the Colombian Supreme Court spoke out against the police is so optimistic compared to how things would go with our Supreme Court. Like, it's both things at once where it's like, yeah, well, it'd be nice if the Supreme Court would say something about what the cops were doing here. But yeah, wild stuff. So yeah, and again, the president Ivan Duque, I think I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but I don't like it. He met with Colombian protest leaders on Monday, so like literally the day before we recorded this podcast, to try and curb the violence of the anti-government protests. Protest leaders said the government had shown no empathy for their demands. The government emphasized basically like, we're not going to decide anything this meeting. We're just trying to explore our options. We're putting some feelers out while we shoot you.
Yeah.
Feelers in one hand, guns in the other.
Or you're putting on a show.
Yeah, you're putting on a
show. To show that you are listening when you are.
They met with them in a room.
I am always deeply, I don't know, what's the word?
Skeptical?
Skeptical when I hear the term protest leaders.
Yeah.
Because boy howdy, has that one gone some bad places in the past. It's a good sign, I think, that they didn't, you know, kind of cede anything to the government at the same, and that they kind of continue to say, we don't think the government gives a shit about us. There was a line in a Reuters article on our doc here that I think is interesting. Quote, attendees agreed on the need to reject violence, said High Peace Commissioner Miguel Ceballos, who also repeated the government call for road blockades around the country to be lifted. The government has proposed a further meeting with the strike committee. So it is concerning to me. These protest leaders agreed on the need to reject violence when it's like not them doing most of it.
Yeah.
Maybe the way they said it is like, we agree the government needs to reject violence. I wasn't in these meetings.
And that's
the way
it gets spun.
Yeah, that's the way
and
it gets spun.
And just to be clear, the blockades are a part of the general strike.
Yeah, it's one of the only options you have when your enemies have helicopters and machine guns, is you can try to block trade and transit in order to damage the economy. Because as we saw here last year, all the government ever really cares about is the economy. So you hurt the economy when you're being hurt by
then
the government.
Then you get a meeting. Then you get, yeah.
Then you get a meeting.
Then you get the women.
Oh,
sorry.
So
that was
violent.
I went Scarface there for a second. I couldn't stop it.
It's fine.
Well, it's simple. If they want the blockades to be lifted, they should do more than just listen to this.
And agree.
Or whatever they spun, this exploratory meeting. Anyway.
We'll see how the second meeting goes. I'm sure they'll get a lot more consideration done.
Great meeting, guys. Let's circle back in 6 months.
Let's say 120 more protester deaths. You know, that's a better measure of time. We'll circle back.
No,
we kill another
120
of you. See if you're still gonna blockade.
Yeah, I mean, this is a lot of, you know, you wait them out, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, we'll do another meeting. Well, you know, we're considering it's a conversation. It's an ongoing conversation. It's good to have a conversation. And hopefully, from their perspective, the protests die down.
Yeah. You know who else likes to have conversations, Cody?
Cody? You. Me.
I mean,
Robert.
I we. Do not. I not me. Hate talking and oh, okay. hate people.
No, not Katie,
But I love the conversations my wallet has with the products and services that support our podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Exchanging words.
Mm-hmm. Exchanging money is so much more eloquent than words, Cody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I don't even, when I go on a date now, I don't even talk. I just start reading out debit card numbers.
Yeah,
not even
talks.
Mine. Other people's money yeah. talks just as well. You know, I think you can have a great conversation just with stolen debit card numbers. That's all you really need.
Steal some debit cards and have
steal
a conversation
some debit cards.
With mm-hmm. these then, sponsors.
Yeah, exactly. With your stolen debit cards.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
We're back and just loving life. Stealing debit cards.
Stealing debit cards. Just flipping through all our 20s, all our hundreds, signed by mm-hmm. Steve Mnuchin.
Our Mnuchins? Yeah, that's the $107 bill.
Mnuchin bucks are where it's at.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's one kind of, I don't know, a number, obviously, like with any sort of uprising like this, as horrible as the violence is, there are some positive signs. One of them just is that people are kind of being welded together in an effective force. They're starting to see the government and the military police apparatus as a common enemy rather than dividing amongst themselves and letting it kind of rule. And that's broadly positive. And there's some signs that, like, maybe what we're seeing in Colombia right now is a growing and a more effective populist movement on the left,
mm-hmm.
Which, again, was heavily battered as a result of you know, the Colombian military's anti-drug operations. So we may be seeing something new being formed kind of in its place. And I'm going to quote here from the New York Times. President Duque, a conservative, has lost significant popularity since the beginning of the pandemic. Colombia will hold presidential elections in 2022. For decades, the country has elected conservative leaders. But Gustavo Petro, a left-wing former mayor of Bogota and former member of a demobilized leftist guerrilla group, now leads in the polls. Mr. Duque, limited by law to one term, cannot run for re-election. The government's response to recent protests could be a significant factor in next year's vote. So that's would be
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, that is a real positive. And like I said earlier, I am inspired is the wrong word because it sounds like just so trite, but it is incredible to see people doing this under the awful circumstances. But this is most likely the way that things actually get done in our world.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful. Yeah. I'm hopeful that, you know, I don't know how this resolves, but like you said, long term, that this means is there's some sort of a shift in power that comes, you know, especially after the elections.
Yeah, people realizing one term, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Only one. Interesting.
Yeah, that actually, again, a couple of things here I wouldn't mind stealing. One term presidents.
I mean, they still have presidents. Idea. So, like, whatever.
I mean, yeah, it's not like their presidents are good. None of them are ever good. Yeah. But
if you're
one term
have to have
limit
one, yeah.
seems good. If you're going to have them, maybe limit them to one term. And then once we have them limited to one term, maybe cut it back to half a term.
Just a half
maybe,
term.
Maybe mm-hmm. eventually reduce it to zero terms. So we still elect presidents, but it's a felony for them to serve. And we just throw them in prison when they win elections.
Exactly.
Because running for president is conspiracy
won.
To commit a felony. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think we actually have hit upon a great way to improve the political situation in this country.
Just imprison everybody trying to run for office.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
it
the could, law.
It wouldn't
you know?
Be worse.
It's like, well, we know who you are now. You want to be a politician?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. No.
Oh, that's some hard time running for Congress.
Yeah.
Put some real scumbags behind bars today.
Hey. Registered his campaign website. We got him.
We got him. good stuff.
But
so I guess
it is.
We,
yeah, that is a potentially positive thing.
Yeah.
To see people sort of wake up to certain aspects and to, yeah, have a sort of groundswell of support. Not even like support for something, but in opposition of this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If that's where it starts, that's where it starts. Yeah. I'm just trying to like, just trying to be optimistic about where this might lead. On a less optimistic note, but also still important note, at Bellingcat, my colleague Giancarlo Fiorella, who he and I traveled up and down the Eastern Seaboard teaching classes on open source journalism, he also teaches a bunch of free classes in Latin America to journalists in a number of different countries who wouldn't be able to pay for the training. He's a Venezuelan national.
Man, he sounds very cool.
He's fucking rad. He has put together a Bellingcat, well, not just an article, but like a platform. Like, and currently the map is all in Spanish, but it's a map tracking police violence in Colombia. And this actually started last year in October. It's part of a partnership between Bellingcat and Cero Setenta. Cero Setenta, which is a Colombian news organization that covers social issues. It's based in the University of the Andes Graduate School, Journalism Graduate School. And the map is, I'm not going to try to say it in Spanish because I don't want to embarrass everyone else, but it's Cartography of Police Violence is what it's called. And this is kind of based on reporting that they started doing last fall with this this new organization, Cero Setenta, where Bellingcat would provide kind of advice on how to go about open source research for articles they were publishing. And there were a number of them. One of them was Who Was the Hooded Figure in Galan, which was about a guy wearing a hood who opened fire on protesters in Bogota's Galan neighborhood on the night of September 9th, 2020. The man was dressed in civilian clothing, wearing a hoodie, and appeared to be working with a group of uniformed police officers. One thing that's been happening in Colombia recently is large numbers of civilian vigilantes with rifles, right-wing vigilantes with rifles, attacking protesters, potentially disappearing protesters. Again, stuff that is happening around the world. This is just
shades
you know,
of it.
I mean,
yeah.
we are yeah. familiar yeah. with, yes, a shade
yes.
of that here.
Yeah. Another article they worked on together was 94 shots in Verbenal. It shows the moment that police officers opened fire on a group of demonstrators near a police station in Bogota's Verbenal neighborhood. Three protesters were killed that night. And so they've done a bunch of really good work and are continuing to do work updating this map with other incidents of police violence. It's only available in Spanish currently. I think they'll be working on that at some point, but, you know,
you could do the translate online. I just did.
Figure it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like you click on a link and it will ask if you want to translate to English.
Yeah. But if you just go to bellingcat.com, that's currently the main article up on the site. A new platform maps Colombia's escalating police violence. So check it out.
You want to look at
That's really helpful. Depressing, but helpful.
Yeah. It's good shit. I don't know. Anyone got any fun news to lead us out of?
Oh, man.
There's
Belinda Gates divorcing Bill.
Yeah, that is pretty rad because of his deep and long and creepy friendship
with Epstein.
Admiration.
A friendship that started after he was already a convicted sex offender. Wild. Many
you know,
flights
okay.
on the Lolita Express. To talk about philanthropy.
Think it's noble, Katie, to adopt a rescue animal. Is it really any different to adopt a rescue animal than to befriend a convicted sex offender?
I would say it is.
Okay, that's probably
but,
fair.
Yeah, I was going to say,
But, you know, I have
nice
a hard
try
time.
With your gotcha.
It's just wild when you look at you know, Bill Gates, we've talked about Bill Gates on our various programs and shows.
I'll have to do a BTB about him at some point.
I think you should.
He's a piece of shit, for sure.
And just the, you know, but he's a philanthropist, you know.
Yeah.
But no, but he's a billion, hundreds of billions of dollars, whatever his net worth is. It's a goddamn tax write-off, his philanthropy, you know. Mm. And using that as a justification for having met with Epstein and, you know, whatever various shady explanations he's given. He's not a good dude, but I have a hard time also believing that Melinda Gates is very good either.
No, I mean, I don't care about either of them. And
yeah.
None of us should, because whatever happens, they'll both be fine. Like, they will both, no matter how, what happens, they'll both remain impossibly rich and powerful. So who gives a shit about either of them?
Tax the motherfuckers.
Tax the motherfuckers. Take their money. Maybe hurl
also,
Bill
like,
Gates
stop putting them in charge of things.
Stop like, putting them in charge of things.
Like, they don't, stop it.
I think
you don't need to be in charge of, like, solving global health.
No.
Also, every news app stops sending us notifications about every step of their divorce. We don't fucking care. Thank you for telling us once.
No, we really don't.
Like, since it's been announced, I want to say every day I get some kind of news alert from some kind of thing about their divorce. Don't care. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't care unless it's more details about Bill's friendship with Jeffrey Epstein.
100%.
Jepstein. Yeah. I don't know. I hate all of this. but I have been thinking if you know the cult that I'm building ever does overthrow the federal government and and put me in power, absolute power, unchecked power.
Of course.
I think a good penalty to Bill Gates would be to take all of his money and work in one of those like little bitty computer repair kiosks. And I can't decide if it would be funnier for him to fix Windows laptops that are broken or to make him one of those guys who has to fix the screens on iPhones.
I was going to say maybe the screen iPhone or like just like phones in general.
Because
no one's going to bring in, what's the fucking Windows phone
Windows
called?
Windows phone? I mean, they have a pretty Windows cool one phone. Now, but I'm waiting for the Gen 2.
BlackBerry?
BlackBerry.
I used
couple
to love
of 90-year-olds stumble in with their BlackBerries. Spilled prune juice on the keyboard.
I'll try to use this to pivot to something slightly positive. I don't know. I mentioned this to you guys before we started recording. A lot of our listeners know that I'm in Arizona dealing with some family stuff. And I try to avoid talking politics with people here. You know, I'm trying to interact
good
with my aunt's friends and get to know them. Yeah. And there are lovely, wonderful people. A lot of them who definitely have a different perspective than me. There was one suggestion of not knowing where the virus came from and Bill Gates' name was brought up. And I said, yeah, well, I don't know about that, but I do agree Bill Gates sucks. And talk about vaccines. If he wants to be a philanthropist, you know, what are we doing advocating for not releasing the vaccine patent, you know? And I pivoted around to that and brought that further around to saying, how do you feel about taxing billionaires? Oh, yeah. Fuck him. Tax him. Tax him.
That
so
is
we
the
can
thing.
Find common
Everyone
ground.
Everyone agrees on that. Yeah.
There's lot less division on that specific issue than billionaires want us to think.
And some other issues. Not all of the issues that we care about. But I do think that there are ways that we can take the thread of someone else's perspective and say, well, I don't agree with this part of it, but here's where we can agree. And I don't know that that's productive all the time in all of our relationships. This is case by case, but it's interesting for me as an exercise right now.
No, I think it's important to find important areas where you can reach compromise without compromising on things that can't be compromised on. And I think a thing that is a positive compromise is, well, what if we make billionaires less rich and use that money to build better roads and maybe provide healthcare to people? It's a lot of folks, even who consider themselves more conservative, can get on board with at least aspects of that. And every dollar we chisel out of those motherfuckers' hands is a win.
Yeah.
Unless it goes to sending more military equipment to the Colombian government, which is the second aspect of improving material conditions. Yeah.
It's just, I don't expect everybody to agree with people from across, you know, the other side of the political spectrum. I don't think you can give passes on a lot of things and a lot of conversations, but I do think that there are common ground misconceptions that have festered and grown a lot over the last 4 years during the pandemic, all of it, that if you can approach the conversation by finding, because at the end of the day, most people are, wanting to be able to work and pay for their family and you can agree with that. You can agree with basic things.
Yeah, they're basic inroads and to sort of plant seeds like that and sort of help, bridge the divide in those kinds of ways and push back on maybe some of the other things.
I'll share one other thing that I told you guys before, just because I enjoyed this part of the conversation. you know, the fact that restaurants and other places of work are having a hard time getting people to come back in because, you know, the federal relief has been and unemployment has been more than what they make at their jobs. And I just said, I understand. I know it's frustrating. It is frustrating. And I feel for businesses that are trying to get back and they can't find workers. But doesn't it suck that people can work full time and not be able to pay their bills? Like, I feel like the real problem is that we can't, that has to be addressed, is that we need to pay people a living wage. And that was a universally agreed upon point. And so that's just another, I don't know. I've left these conversations feeling really good, you know, and that's, yeah, I guess, the positive thing that I want to share.
I mean, most of these things people agree on, but like it's sort of clouded by the culture war bullshit that dominated so much of
you know, and they discourse. Talk about like not trusting the media because it's all everything's owned by corporations. And I get that. I know. Yeah. And then I say it's true on the right. And they're like, you're right. It is, you know.
And it's the, I think part of what you're hitting on is the difference between someone says something and there's an aspect of it you disagree with. For example, the aspect of that I would disagree with is that, like, it's negative that these businesses that aren't treating workers right can't find work. But in the interest of that conversation, why would I focus on arguing with someone about that when I can be like, can we agree the problem is that they're not getting paid enough and that workers should be able to make a living if they're working full time and we should change the way that part of our society works? Oh, okay. Maybe I don't need to argue about this other fact because it's more important to get you on board with increasing living standards for working people. And if we can get on board with that, I'll argue with you about the other shit later, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's not to say that there aren't going to be frustrating conversations, but I am finding that kind of approach helpful because then these are everybody I've met is wonderful. If any of you guys happen to be listening now, I think you're great. And I really appreciate you, you know, because then they were like, I'll check out your shows, you know. Ooh. And I got nervous.
I'm always nervous, when family checks out the shows.
I was like, great, 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 cool. I'm from California, just so you know. Like, yeah. If we're unclear. But, you know, I really feel positive about some of
them. Yeah. I had a conversation with somebody recently that led that down that path of, like, check out the show, I guess. But during that there was a lot of differing opinions and so on, and like he slipped in this thing about Steven Crowder. Ooh. And like liking his whole thing. I was like, okay,
there are some things we just don't go into right now.
Yeah, like, but then I when I saw that person again later, like a week later, they were like, oh, I saw your show. Biden sucks, right? And I was like, yeah, right. That's fine.
Well, and then there's that.
It was lucky that the most recent episode was about, like, well,
we can start there.
But why does he is the question.
It's a good common ground. Well, and that was another part of it. Like, just flat out not trusting politicians. And I get that. Just flat out. Not on either side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think
we can agree with this, that this is a problem. Get the money out of politics, you know?
Yeah, and I think kind of where you have to go from there is, okay, we agree, politicians are corrupt and they suck and they do across the board. Right now, your thing is I want to find someone who's not a politician to elect, you know, which is kind of the idea with Trump. He's not a politician,
right.
So he'll be a better politician. And instead, like, okay, let's take that starting point and get to – perhaps we don't need politicians. Perhaps none of them are helping our society. Perhaps they're completely unnecessary and only serve to stoke divisions and make things worse for everybody. Which you can get a lot of people on board with. And when you get them on board with that, a lot of possibilities for fun thinking open up.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway. I guess that does
things
it
are going to be
today.
Fine and good is the conclusion. Yes.
Oh, good as hell, Cody. Good as hell. Anyway, if you're in Colombia, you know, use water and not milk to wash your eyes out with tear gas. I'm sure you guys fucking know that. I keep getting that stuff from American protesters. You know, milk in your eyes for but I'm sure y'all have been tear gassed more than enough at this point. I don't know. Whatever. It's useless for me to say anything. But good luck and keep fighting. You know.
And yeah. we're covering it. We're talking about it.
Yeah,
we'll
keep looking at this. If I hadn't had my passport stolen recently, you know, I would be, I'd be down there. But yeah. Oh, you know what? I do want to note a friend of mine is down there, who's a much better person to cover this than I am. His name is Sergio Olmos. He's been in Colombia for the last couple of days, reporting and doing a lot of like he's been live tweeting a lot of his reporting.
Right.
You can find him at Mr. M R O L M O S.
Sergio Olmos.
Yeah, he's right. Fucking great. He's a wonderful journalist. And again, you know, he's doing a much better job than I would ever have been able to do with the same story. So check him out, support him, whatever way you can. Good luck out there, Sergio, and good luck everybody in Colombia.
From the bottom of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening.
Everything's so dumb. Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel.
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.